Hello, is this Nancy McClelland?
It sure is. Hi, how are you guys doing?
Well, we got Ron Curtis Grace and myself, Rusty Silver. Dave is apparently not with us here tonight.
What do you mean, apparently?
Oh, can't
you
okay?
tell? Can't well, you tell whether or not he's there? What do you mean, apparently?
Well, we miss him. So, you know, he's not here this week. We know that.
Yeah, but you did say he's apparently not here.
Apparently.
Just not a little weird.
Nancy, Dave is patently, obviously not here.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up, Ron. I appreciate it.
So how is our dancing accountant?
The dancing accountant's doing okay, considering that we're in day three of the new funding of the Paycheck Protection Program. You can imagine it's been a little bit of a challenging week helping folks navigate how to get their applications in if they didn't have them in first time around, or how to pick a different lender if they didn't have much luck the first time around. But we're doing okay.
Have you been dealing with any more of your clients who have had an opportunity to receive any funds? I think last time we spoke, you had one who was over the moon over getting $36,000. I believe you said that would pay her employees for 2 months.
Yes. She was the first one out of all of my clients who got funded, and that was huge, because actually that particular person is kind of she's a perfect example of what these funds are meant to do. She kept all of her staff on payroll, even though her revenues were reduced by 50%. She just stopped taking payroll herself so that she could pay her staff. Now, not everybody's in the financial position to be able to do that, but I was really impressed at her dedication and loyalty to them. And so getting that $36,000 is going to mean that she can keep that going for a while longer, even though she's only at 50% revenues.
And that is the exact spirit, as far as I'm concerned, for which this was intended.
Absolutely. Now, to be fair, there are, when the spirit moved people initially in Congress to write up this PPP legislation, they didn't know how bad it was going to be. And so there are a lot of places that have had to let go of all of their staff because they don't have the financial means to just to keep paying the staff, even though they're not getting paid, or even though the revenues have been cut so much. So for those people, they're struggling a little bit more even once they get the PPP funds. So let me give you an example. I have one client who runs a cafe on the South Side, and I'm so thrilled to say that she did receive the PPP funding in the first round. But the 8-week forgiveness period, right? So this is the period through which you look at all of the payroll and some of the rent and the utilities that you're paying during that 8-week period, and you can have the loan forgiven if you follow specific rules. So she got this funding, and the disbursement for it, the 8 weeks of forgiveness, of tracking these expenses, starts the day you get forgiveness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a cafe on the South Side of Chicago, in an area that is completely closed down, and so there's no real way for her to reopen that cafe. She could reopen it, she could rehire everybody, but they're not going to have any customers, right? People aren't going to cafes. Cafes are different than restaurants that can do takeout. Restaurants that can do takeout and delivery, you just are excited to eat the food, even if you can't go hang out there. But a cafe that's got like all this wonderful ambiance and may only offer a few things aside from pastries to eat, you're probably not going to get a lot of business if you're just doing takeout. And you can't afford 30% fees for Grubhub to deliver people's lattes to them.
No, and considering that of the forgiven amount of the loan, 75% must be spent on payroll.
Exactly.
How do you have payroll if you can't even open?
Right.
But you have to spend all the money within 8 weeks.
Right. So that is a great question. We don't know the answer to that question, but there are a couple of ideas that people have floated. And one of them is, you know, see how long this stay at home is going to last and wait to hire people back until you get to a point where hopefully within that 8-week period, you'll be able to hire everybody back. And you would just then pay them hazard pay, because these people aren't going to want to come off of unemployment to come back to their possibly minimum wage job, which is dangerous, right? We're asking, I know that the Republicans in Congress were really mad about this extra $600 that everybody was going to be getting in unemployment, saying, well, we're disincentivizing them to work. But I've read the numbers, and you have to be making $45,000 or less. This is on average, because it's not the same for all states. But on average, you have to be making $45,000 a year or less in order to now be making more on unemployment than you were before. And so we're asking all of the people who are making less than 45K, sometimes substantially less, we're asking them to come back to work in a dangerous job where they might get sick or they're endangering the health of their families, right? We're not asking rich people to do that. We're only asking the poor people to do that. And so, you know, it's a tough situation because she might not be able to get her staff to come back and work once she is able to open. And so where would that leave her? You know, she can kind of wait a few weeks, see how things go, hire everybody back, give them hazard pay to make it worth their while, and maybe get up to that 75% where she's going to get it forgiven, even though she's only paying people maybe for the last 4 or 5 weeks of the loan and of that forgiveness period. And what happens if she can't? Well, she's got a loan for 2 years at 1%. Maybe it's okay that it didn't get forgiven because it's still money that she can use to open up when the time is right.
And you're right. At 1%, you might be better off, because my understanding is it can only be spent on a few categories outside of payroll, rent, mortgage, interest, utilities. But the other thing that seems confusing to me is how these people are keeping track of what constitutes employee costs. Because at one point in time, independent contractors could be included as payroll costs, but now they can't.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would love to talk about this. Ron, you ask all the great questions. You do. You've been thinking about this, I can tell. All right. So let me clarify something. You know how you said initially independent contractors could be included and then it turned out they couldn't?
Right.
That was just a misunderstanding on the part of the people at the SBA who were writing guidance. That was not actually ever intended to be the case. There was a line there, you know, where it said costs of independent contractors. But what that was really supposed to be was when an independent contractor themselves was applying for PPP. Because remember, independent contractors, gig workers, sole proprietors, anybody who files a Schedule C on their tax return, they can all apply for PPP also. That's line 31 on your Schedule C, right? So let's say an independent contractor, maybe I have, I have a bookkeeper that I pay as an independent contractor. He just does, you know, odd jobs for me here and there throughout the course of the year. He files a Schedule C that says, hey, I made this many dollars. I send him a 1099 saying, here's how much I paid him. And he could look at line 31 of his Schedule C, especially presuming if he does that kind of work for a bunch of people. He takes a look at that, and he can use that to calculate what his average monthly payroll would be, right? So that's what they meant when they put independent contractors in there, is they were saying independent contractors can apply for PPP because, in a sense, if you're an independent contractor, you're running your own business. They never meant for it to be businesses that hire independent contractors could include that amount in their average payroll. That was a mistake.
Well, was the other mistake the FICA tax?
The what?
FICA, because I believe...
Oh, the FICA tax. Yes. Okay, that was a big mistake. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so let me explain that one. Let me back up for a second and say that I, for a couple of years now, have said that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that's the most recent, you know, you're going to be able to file your taxes on a postcard.
Right, yeah.
That one?
I'm still
right,
waiting so for that cuts one. And
what's that? You got your postcard out right now?
Yeah, I've got it.
All right. So I have been saying for the past couple of years that that is the sloppiest piece of legislation that I have seen in years and years and years. When they last overhauled the tax code back during Reagan's time, it took them 2 years to actually write it because they would put out a draft and then people like me would look at it and say, oh, look, you've got a mistake here. Oh, look, there's a loophole there, et cetera. And they fine tune it. And they did not do that. They actually passed the TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, with handwritten notes in the margins. And only just now in the CARES Act did they finally fix some of the, as technical corrections, some of the big mistakes they made in that law. Well, let's fast forward to the CARES Act and the PPP program, right, the Payroll Protection Program. I take back what I said about the TCJA being the sloppiest piece of legislation that I've seen.
There's a new contender?
As a new kid in town, and it's called the PPP. It's a mess. I mean, it was written poorly to begin with. It was vague. It still is. We're still waiting on guidance on forgiveness. They told us it was going to be out last Friday. I was in a webinar today with the Great Lakes Regional Director of the SBA, and he said, oh, it's going to happen in a few days. We'll see. We'll see. There's a lot of guidance that hasn't come out. So to your point about FICA, the Social Security and Medicare, what they said there was they said that federal taxes could not be included for the purposes of PPP calculation for monthly average payroll, that it would not be considered. And actually, if you think about it, that makes sense. The employer portion of Social Security and Medicare, and just to back up for your listeners who don't know how that works, when you're a W-2 employee and you have taxes taken out of your paycheck, you're having federal income tax withholding, state income tax withholding, but you're also having Social Security and Medicare taken out.
Right.
And those are called payroll taxes. And your boss, your employer, the company that you work for is matching that amount. So you have 7.65 taken out for Social Security and Medicare, and then your employer matches that for a total of 15.3%. So when they said federal taxes couldn't be included in the calculation for payroll, all of us who are familiar with payroll taxes said, oh, that makes sense. They just don't want you to add in the federal portion of the Social Security and Medicare matching, right? The employer portion of
right.
it. That makes sense, right? And then the SBA came out with guidance saying, no, 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 we mean all federal taxes, the withholding, and both sides of the Social Security and Medicare, the FICA taxes. And everybody was like, are you nuts? This doesn't make any sense. How is that possible? And then they came out with, I believe, what was called the third new interim final guidance or something awful like that, saying, oh, never mind, we were wrong. We just meant the employer portion, which is what we all figured.
It almost reminded me, because I've been following this, and it almost reminds me of the IRS disclaimer that if you call the number for clarification or assistance with some of their new rules, they tell you, well, we'll give you the clarification or the ruling, but if we're wrong, well, that's your problem.
That's your problem. Yeah, it's absolutely true. The guidance that you get from somebody at the IRS is not something that you can rely on as official guidance. There are specific rules about what you can rely on and what you can't in a court of law. And guidance on the phone with the IRS is not one of those things.
Nobody wants
I
to
know,
deal with
amazing.
The IRS these days. Come on. It's tough enough to try to deal
now,
with paying with rents
these days.
I'm going
to say, step off the IRS, because they are doing such an amazing job right now. This is the SBA that's making all of this mess over here with the Payroll Protection Program, but the IRS is doing a stunning job, I have to say. You will not often find me complimenting the IRS. I mean, I'm a CPA, right? I prepare taxes. I have to deal with them all the time. And this one, I got to say, thumbs up. They are getting these stimulus checks out there. They have created programs for being able to go in and update mm-hmm. your direct deposit information. They've given a way for people who aren't required to file or who are just behind and haven't filed. They're saying, here, go to this website and put in your information. We'll give you your check. They've put out, I think they've already sent out by April. I'm trying to remember what the thing was I saw earlier today on a National Association Tax Professionals mm-hmm. webinar. They gave us the stats on this. I'll look it up for you later. Mm-hmm. But it's like 88 million that they sent out just last week. Wow. They're doing an incredible job. And on top of that, they are managing these other benefits, the non-SBA benefits. They're managing the Employee Retention Tax Credit Program. They're managing the Payroll Tax Deferral Program. All of this and the stimulus checks. I gotta hand it. I'm not real happy with the SBA right now, but I'm gonna give the IRS a thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, we've got to take a break here. Do you mind staying with us longer?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
All right, great. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna keep Nancy McClellan around a lot longer because she's got so much great information, doesn't she?
And I have so many more questions.
Yeah, you've got a long list. I know you do, but. No, but it's important, though. The
right.
small business and the extra money that's out there, there are people that are confused at what's going on here. We're confused.
All right, we'll be back.
Government's confused. I don't know. Everybody is confused these days. Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We got more with Nancy McClellan right after this here on WRLR. We're also talking to Nancy McClellan, who's not around here. Right, Nancy? You're in some warmer climate, I heard.
Yeah, I was actually laughing to myself when you were just giving the weather report there because it is, it's 6:30 p.m. and 98 degrees where I am. This is the cool weather. It was well
now,
over
now,
100
hold on,
earlier
hold on. We had
today.
You on last week. Where are you exactly?
She's at an undisclosed location.
I am in Merida, Mexico, which mm-hmm. is the capital of the Yucatan province mm-hmm. and the state of Yucatan. And I come down here every year during the worst of tax season for a few weeks to just focus completely on work and not have to think about anything else and to get out of the terrible weather in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And a few days after we arrived, they closed the border. And so we're going to be here for a while. And you know what? More importantly, we've just decided it's not responsible to travel. I see this as it's not a political issue. It's a public health issue. I think everybody needs to participate and do their part by sequestering in place wherever they are. And so we just decided we're going to stick it out here for a while until we feel like we've gotten the word from epidemiologists that travel is okay.
Well, the fact that you just let epidemiologists roll off your tongue triplingly means you haven't had any Mai Tais yet.
So that's great.
You must still be on the clock.
I guess this proves that I'm on, that I'm on WRLR yeah. community radio as opposed to, the big corporation that doesn't want you yeah. to talk about science.
Well, I also understand that down there where you are, Mauricio Villadosal is turning into the Yucatan Andrew Cuomo.
It's true. He's doing an amazing job. I would say I'm going to give him way higher props even than Cuomo because so when we arrived, there were only three incidents of the virus. And they were all foreigners who brought it in with them, and they were being isolated. And yet they had already closed all schools, all museums, all public buildings.
Closed
it was
down the
only
traffic.
A week later yeah. that they closed restaurants and said only takeout and delivery, and instituted, we went to the pharmacy in that next week to buy a container of alcohol, and there were clotheslines up delineating six feet apart, and there's tape on the ground at the grocery stores and saying this is what 6 feet apart is. And everybody wears a mask. It's required. They actually won't let you have more than one person in a car at a time, which is very interesting. He's taken it very seriously from day one.
Yeah, well, he's the governor down there, Rusty.
Yeah, I can tell. And he's taking a full stand on that there. So, but she's able to do
her
work.
It's interesting because, you know, we had some friends and family that were very concerned that we were in Mexico for this because they had heard that the Mexican president wasn't doing a great job managing it. And definitely at first, you know, he was basically being very Trumpian about it. You know, suggesting that it was not a problem and that you could hug people and shake hands with them. You know, lots of photos and videos of him flouting the laws of science and just going around and doing his thing. He's changed his tune since then. And so a lot of people were really concerned for us, but because the Yucatan is actually at least 60%, it's got a 60% Native American population, the Mayans.
The Mayans, yeah,
they're actually an autonomous state, and so the governor gets to call the shots. So he and the governors of the neighboring provinces have done a really great job.
Yeah, we've been following it. We've been keeping up.
Well, thanks, guys.
One thing I wanted to ask, now, you just got through saying before we went to the break pretty much what I was thinking, that if you want a recipe for confusion, if not chaos or outright disaster, let Congress write an act and then hand it off to Treasury and the SBA to implement.
Mm-hmm.
But for local, I'm seeing now that the Illinois Small Business COVID-19 Relief Fund has added $250 million to the $250 million they already had in that fund. But what interested me more than anything, these are, of course, low-interest bridge loans for small businesses, but it's through a network of only community banks and credit unions, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yeah. That is correct. That is correct. The state and county and city resources, even though they don't have as much money as the federal government, they've been able to be much more targeted about how they're distributing these funds. It has also caused a little bit of a bottleneck, I'll say that, because, you know, you're allowing very, very few. I mean, I love these community lenders that are in the program, but, you know, they're only able to process so many at a time. So there's been a little bit of, I don't want to say little bit, that's just not honest. There's been a lot of problems actually getting this money to the people who have applied for the various programs. But I applaud them for trying to keep it small.
Well, not only that, I mean, I also read that the banking industry groups are saying the SBA system can't handle the volume.
Oh, my goodness. Can we talk about the banking system for a minute here? Because there are some things I would love to share about what you just said.
Sure, because there's some banks saying they can't even get any applications into the SBA system.
Did you read that article? Mm-hmm. It was a CNN one yesterday about Bank of America having submitted something like 187,000 loans in the first day of the reopening of the PPP and only getting 1,000 of them funded.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just been amazing. So what's going on here? I feel like I'm on both sides of this one, because on the one hand, I am a community bank supporter. One of my specialties in what I do as a CPA and working with small businesses is cooperatives. So credit unions are a type of cooperative. And cooperatives are companies that are owned by the members, right? Mm-hmm, and
right.
So instead of shareholder wealth being the main goal, instead, the thing that the cooperative is created for, so for example, if it's a grocery store, the most important thing is not profit and returning profit to the shareholders. The most important thing is providing affordable groceries, and, you know, especially if you decide you want it to be a natural or organic grocery store, you know, providing those kinds of groceries. So co-ops don't have the same kind of restrictions and rules about paying out to shareholders that the big companies do. So I'm a big fan of credit unions. I'm a big fan of community lenders. I'm a big fan of staying small. But we need to remember that small businesses, lots of small businesses, bank at big banks.
Yeah, I know.
Bank of America is actually the largest small business bank in the world. And Chase is not far behind. So what SBA has done is they have said, and they keep changing the rules. Every single day they change the rules. They said, okay, you know what? When this program reopens at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, this past Monday, we're going to let any banks that have more than 15,000 loans, we're going to let them submit all of them in one big batch so that they don't have to, you know, manually key in every single one of these loans. And the banks were like, oh my gosh, really? That's great. But hey, it's Sunday night at 9 o'clock p.m. and you just told us this. So of course the banks go like crazy. They work as hard as they can to try to, you know, take the template that SBA has given them to be able to upload all this stuff in batch at 10:30 the next morning. So they work on this all night long. 10:30 the next morning comes, it doesn't work. System goes down. E-Tran, which is the SBA system, it goes down. And so then the banks are like, what do we do? You said we were going to be able to submit all of this in batch. And they said, okay, well, let's just do it 5,000 at a time. Okay, well, we batch it 5,000. Then we batch it 5,000. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of applications from small businesses, okay? Big banks, but small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So here they are uploading 5,000 at a time, 5,000 at a time, 5,000 at a time. And then they said, SBA said, we're not going to allow you to use bots anymore to enter the information. You have to key in each one manually. You can use an API, but not a bot. Well, most banks aren't set up to use APIs. So they pulled people from every area of the bank, any department that had human beings. They said, sit here and start typing these numbers into the SBA E-Tran system. And then, I'm just going to take this one step further. Then the SBA just came out saying, you know what? From 4 p.m. until midnight each day, we're only going to let small banks apply.
That'll bring everything to a halt.
Yeah. So there are some serious problems over at the SBA, and I'm trying to figure out what the motivation is. My guess is that they didn't like the bad press about what happened last time where some, you know, of the big banks, Chase specifically, gave out some of the biggest loans to some of these public companies. But, you know, that's not the bank's fault. That was the legislation's fault. The legislation made it complete, as we talked about last time, legislation made it completely okay, completely legal for those companies to ask for these multimillion dollar loans.
Yeah,
and
we had originally,
it's not for the bank to decide.
We had originally touched on the restaurant chains, and then the other day we were talking about the 4.6 million that the Lakers have decided they will return.
Oh my God, Ron, when I found out about the Lakers, I just about lost it. It was bad enough to begin with, but really the Lakers, man.
I thought I heard a scream coming from somewhere south. I wasn't sure how far south that was. My goodness.
That was me. That was me. And the thing is, I just want to go back to what I was saying last time. This isn't the big banks that are the bad guys here. Not this time. They've been bad guys plenty of times. But this time, the issue is the sloppy legislation. If they saw what was going on with the Lakers and Ruth's Chris and Potbelly's and you know, AutoZone and all of these big companies, if they saw what was going on and the politicians said, no, this is not what we intended, instead of just posturing, why didn't they pull that out? There was a second round. They came out with more legislation and said, we need to fund this. And they added a lot of other things to that second round. But they didn't change anything about how, you know, what your net worth or your assets needed to be in order to apply for this. They didn't say that you had to personally guarantee any of it. They and there were a lot of things they didn't change that they could have, and they didn't pull out that loophole. Well, it's not really a loophole because they wrote it in there on purpose. But the thing we talked about last time, where hotels and chains, hotels and restaurant chains, they removed those affiliation rules so that each location could be a small business. Yeah, they didn't remove that. So it's really hard for me to hear this political posturing and have them go, ooh, the Lakers are bad because they did this. And it's like, yeah, the Lakers saw an opportunity. You gave them that opportunity. It's not the banks that are causing the problem here. It's the legislation.
Well, it may not be the big banks at fault this time, but as you are, I only will deal with state-chartered banks, and there's a reason I've been banking at my credit union since the mid-'80s.
Yay. After, go you. Credit unions are the best. I love credit
after
unions.
After I looked at what happened with the mortgage bubble when those tranches dissolved, after having looked at long-term capital management, I mean, I could go on and on. That soured me quite a while ago.
Yeah. And it should. I'm not trying to get banks off of the hook for any of the things big banks do that are abhorrent. But in this particular round, I feel like they're definitely getting, big banks are getting a very unfair rep. For example, you know, there are a lot of allegations, and I don't know, some of them may be true, that they pushed through the bigger customers first. And the way I see it, I think it's extremely likely that what really happened is, you know, each bank has got lots of different departments. You've got a department for micro businesses, small businesses, middle market, et cetera, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, when you're a really big company, then, you know, you need a lot more bankers to be helping you out with the things that you're asking for, right? So you get a lot of bankers assigned to you. So if you look at, like, the department that takes care of the larger small businesses, as we discussed last time, what qualifies as a small business is a lot bigger than you would think.
Yeah, gargantuan small business.
Exactly. So if you look at the gargantuan small business department at a big bank, they're going to have maybe, you know, thousands of customers in that one department. And then you look at the smallest of the, you know, the micro business. What did you call it last time? Nano business, I think.
Nano business.
Yeah, if you look at the nano business banking department, you have hundreds and hundreds of thousands, probably millions of customers for that department, right? And so how long is it going to take a big business that has a PPP application, that has personal relationships with their bankers, they've already been vetted, they don't have to have their credit checks, they've got their financials on file, the bank says, okay, great, plus the fact that those big businesses, when they're submitting their application, those big businesses had accountants and attorneys on staff to be able to prepare those applications properly. Once it gets to the bank practically has to do nothing. Whereas 90%, I know it at Bank of America, in their small business department, 90% of the PPP applications that they received from the kinds of businesses that are, when we think of small, you know, small businesses, real small businesses, 90% of those needed help. 90% of them had calculated something wrong, or they didn't provide the correct documentation, or they took pictures with their cell phone of the documentation and stuff got cut off, you know? So it's really not surprising me that the big businesses were getting funded first, and that it's not necessarily, I'm not saying one way or the other, but it's not necessarily that the banks were picking them. It's just that their applications were coming in clean, and there are a lot more bankers per big business, the bigger of the small businesses, than there are for the small ones.
Their applications were coming in clean, and the bottom line for me is if I'm a little nobody, I'm given an 800 number and a 43-minute waiting time until our next customer service rep.
You got an 800 number? I can't even contact my bank.
And if you're one of these gargantuan small businesses, a CFO is making a direct call to somebody who he knows.
Absolutely. I'm just saying that it is unfair in a thousand different ways, but I don't think that it's likely that it is illegal. Mm-hmm. I think that this is just the way it is. It is a problem with the way that our society is built. We don't value small businesses because small businesses don't have capital. I'm sure you've heard this a thousand times. When should you ask a bank for money?
When you don't need it.
When you already have it.
Yeah.
Yes, when you don't need it. Exactly. Right? So I mean, that's the way that our country works. That's how a capitalist society functions.
I call it Bruce Hornsby and the Range capitalism.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
Oh, come on.
Well, I know the next line in that song is something will never change.
Yeah.
But I hope they do. I hope they do.
Nancy, you've got so much information. We may want you on another time here, but I'll tell you this.
I would be happy to. I would love to come on and be able to talk about some non-PPP things that are options for people, because it's not the only program out there for small businesses, and there are lots of options for individuals as well. So
we'll talk about that next time. And I thought of you quickly. I thought of you the other day because last time you talked about the small restaurant owners thinking outside the box and finding some innovative ways. And Rusty and I reported yesterday on a theater in Park Ridge, the Pickwick, and what they're doing is taking online orders for popcorn, $5 a box, and they rent it out to the curb. And the owner was saying the very first week, they do it on Wednesday and Saturday, so the very first week, he had 300 to 400 cars at $5 a box.
Oh, God, that just absolutely warms my heart. That's wonderful to hear.
That's called creativity, I'll tell you.
And that's called neighborhood support.
It's called creativity,
support.
But yeah. It's also called community support.
Oh, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
It's a great support. Speaking of support, if some people have questions for you, and I bet I got a long list of people that say, I got a question for our dancing accountant here.
Yeah.
Where can they send you information on your email? And I posted what you put on today about some PPPs on our website, too. I saw that little notice.
Great.
But the thing is, where can people get in touch with you? Because I think email is probably the best way these days. Being where you're at.
I'm so sorry. I would love to say that, but with all of the clients that I have needing my help and it being tax season, I am so far behind already. I'm getting a lot of calls and emails from the public, and I feel really bad saying I'm sorry that I can't help you. But you can go to my blog and read all about a lot of this stuff, and you can also contact your district, your state rep district, and if you're in Cook County, you can contact your county district commissioner's office. Both your state rep district's office and the county commissioner's office are fielding all sorts of calls on all of the types of things that we're talking about here, and they're doing a great job with it.
And even though you don't have a special section on your blog, I can tell from reading it myself that many of the people who might have questions, your blog kind of reads like a frequently asked questions. So those people who need some help, need some understanding, know that you are not alone and you're not the only one with the question. So, yeah, go to the blog.
You are not the only one. That is a great point. That is a great point. And I also want to point out that the blog is searchable. So if you go to www.thedancingaccountant.com and you go to the little search bar up in the upper right-hand corner and you type in whatever you're talking about, so it could be unemployment or PPP or EIDL or payroll tax credit, small business resources, new rules for retail, non-essential businesses. I mean, there are so many things up there, and you can search it, and I'm guessing if you have the question, somebody else has already asked it, as Ron was just saying, and you can pull it up that way. And there's just lots of great stuff on there. I spend a lot of hours each day researching and writing for my clients, but I figure rather than just sending it to my clients, I'll make it public for everybody.
All right, Nancy, thank you very much for your time. We'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Thanks so much, you guys. I really appreciate it. Take good care.
All right. Thanks, Nancy.
Before we run out of here, because, boy, we're getting close to the top of the hour.